Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the David Martinez podcast coming at you in October, early October. I'm not sure exactly when this thing is going to be published, so I'm not going to give a specific date, but we'll just say this is early October. So this being the first edition of this, I guess I should probably explain why I decided to do it. Well, I've always kind of wanted to just sort of start either like a blog. Originally the idea was a blog, and I started trying to write some things. I don't know, this or that, you know, supposedly pithy observation about something. And I realized I'm a lot more effective of a communicator when I speak than when I write. I could just never really complete a thought. And I just felt myself sort of rambling and rambling and rambling, which is more okay when you're just speaking candidly, but a lot less so and a lot more monotonous when you're just, you know, sort of writing. And also, I found it a lot harder to, like, you know, make a joke sort of land properly when I'm writing. Because when you're speaking, you can make something funny just by your inflection or by your timing or anything else. But when you're writing, it's a lot different to sort of make something funny or make something sort of punch. And I'm not particularly good at that. My sister, who's a fashion sort of blogger, is much better at that than I am. And I'm just not. So I thought, oh, podcasting. I've got some audio equipment and some computer know-how. I can probably do this and make it happen. And so I did. And I guess a lot of it just has to do with the fact that I, like many people sort of my age and in my station in life, I feel somewhat at a loss for creative outlets in my life. You know, when I was younger, I used to do a lot of things. I was in improv comedy, and you know, I did plays in high school, and I played in a band, and I wrote music, and there was all these sort of things that, you know, you just had all this excess time for. That now, as I've gotten older, and, you know, work's become more demanding, and I've gotten married, and just other things sort of impress upon your life and impress upon your time, I just don't feel like I have the time for anymore, or I don't have as much sort of expendable time to sort of throw at these things anymore. And I really kind of missed that, missed having some sort of outlet. I kind of went back and forth for quite some time as to whether or not I should do anything like this, mostly because I can't get away from that notion that pretty much anybody who starts any kind of blog or podcast or anything, or, you know, anything of that nature is kind of a little narcissistic, you know? At the end of the day, what you're really sort of communicating is that I have things to say, and I think they're important or insightful or intelligent or funny or something enough to where people really need to hear them. I'm kind of a big deal that way, and it's really what you're kind of communicating. And I guess there is that aspect to it. I have to be honest with myself and realize that there is part of me that just that kind of thinks like that. And when, you know, the more you let that part of you just, you know, sort of drive, you know, the way you speak, the less honestly you're going to speak about things. You know, pride, like anything else, kind of ruins the honesty of what you have to say and ruins the integrity of what you have to say. Because now you're saying things, with, this other motivation to come off as funny or to come off as intelligent or to come off as insightful about things, rather than just sort of speaking from the heart, which is really the most impactful thing that you can do when it comes to this sort of stuff. You know, speaking in ways that are honest to hopefully, you know, reach other people or to hit other people on that same wavelength, because they go, oh yeah, no, totally. I've sort of always felt that way. Or, oh, you know what? I never really consciously thought of it that way, but that's interesting that you would put it that way. And so, you know, as time goes on, if, you know, if I come off like a prick or if I say something a little stupid or a little flippant, feel free to call me out on it. I'll open up the podcast for people's own comments and I'll try to observe as much as possible. I know, statistics being what they are, most people who have anything to say on the internet probably have something horrible to say. But, you know, such is the nature of the medium. So, anyhow, moving on. So football season is very well underway. I myself am not particularly a sports fan. And I say that, and I'm going to make this really important distinction here. Most people, when they kind of say that, they sort of smugly, you know, say it in such a way that it's the sort of point of pride for them. I was on Facebook the other day, and this guy posts this sort of image from the show IT Crowd. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a really, really, really funny British sitcom about these two IT guys in a building. But anyway, moving on. Not important. Where the two guys were at a soccer game, and being the nerds that they are, they don't really understand or appreciate it very well. So the guy's sitting there saying things like, oh, that guy now has the ball, and oh, now it's over there. Hey, he's kicked it to that guy. What an interesting development. Obviously bored out of his mind. He doesn't really know what's going on. And it's sort of funny because it is sort of a, you know, sort of nerd stereotype. But like a lot of things, I feel as though people who, just for whatever reason, like myself, just do not find sports tremendously interesting or just can't seem to get involved in them very well, kind of take it like this, sort of subtly take it like this point of pride, like it's due to some degree of sophistication or intelligence on my part that I don't participate in this sort of very common and pedestrian sort of thing that everybody seems to like. And I really, really don't feel that way. It's there is something so wonderfully communal about sports and people who are really into sports and who have their local teams and their local loyalties to these teams and these sort of loyalties that aren't that are much more like family than they are to, you know, to any particular taste, you know, because as many of you know who have their own home teams, you love and you support and you stand behind that home team no matter how badly they do. And, you know, sports being what they are, most people don't have teams that are really strong winners all the time. And, you know, we all know, we all see those sort of very fair weather kind of fans, you know, whenever the sort of Angels are doing well or the Lakers are doing sort of well, suddenly everybody's got their flag and everyone's got their jersey. And, you know, those are the sort of people who love sports and love sports teams for a reason. Usually some pedantic reason like, well, they're doing well, so of course I'm going to stand by these people. These guys are winners. But, you know, the people who belong to that normal and traditional sports community of this is just the team who I call my team because I came from that homeland, you know, because I came from that city or because my parents did or because just one day I arbitrarily decided Philadelphia Eagles. Why not? These are the people that I'm standing behind. And I may not always like them. I may not always agree with the decisions that they make, and certainly I may not always be proud of them in the sense that they don't always have this winning streak, but I stand behind them. I stand behind them. It's my team. And it is that kind of sort of transcendent loyalty in things that I feel like people, especially my age, don't really have anymore. We kind of regard that sort of stuff as sort of silly and kind of old-fashioned. Usually when it's expressed as sort of national loyalty. But I think sports and sports loyalties and just that sort of communal sense that it creates is just a really, really great thing. And I always feel a little bit on the outside when, you know, I see people talking so passionately about, you know, well, so-and-so got traded to this team. And, you know, I think these guys are going to do particularly well because, you know, he's over here and he's got this great record over here and this coach guy, he's done such a bad job for this, and he really should have done that. And you know, who knows? I mean, I certainly don't know. You know, typically speaking, if you're just some guy who's not making a lot of money, you know, coaching sports, you probably don't know a lot of what you're talking about. But at the same time, it's people talking very passionately about things that is very common and that everybody or most people can sort of relate to and get behind. You know, the people that I know that are into sports, you know, have lives and vocations that just, you know, seem to span the entire gamut from genius working professionals and, you know, and you know, really, you know, difficult sort of fields to just common average everyday people working blue collar jobs. And it is that sort of universal aspect of it that I think is really, really great. And conversely, I think it's that universal and accessible aspect of it that I think people sometimes kind of disdain about it, that anything that common and that accessible I don't know, is like somehow maybe below me because I consider myself sophisticated somehow. And I never want to be that kind of person, you know? I never want to be the kind of person who looks at something that everybody's doing and disdains it immediately for that one reason. So yeah, I mean, being, you know, as somebody who's really not all that interested in it, it's not a point of pride for me. It's almost something I'm a little embarrassed about. Because it's this thing that people can, participate in that I don't feel really a part of, that I'm always this outsider sort of looking in, and I find it interesting, hearing people talk about it. I think I find people talking very passionately and very honestly passionately about things, always very interesting. And I say honestly passionately because, I do feel like it's another habit of our sort of time and age to have this sort of false passion about things. And I can elaborate on that in some other time, but I speak passionately, not because I honestly feel this strongly about this particular matter, but because I have this instinct or this sense that the degree to which I speak, you know, passionately about it reflects very well on me. And I am outraged by this thing, or this thing is so amazing. Not because I really feel that way, but because I know the more I feel that way, the better it makes me look. And so I will sort of put that up. But anyway, whole nother topic of conversation. But people who do honestly get excited about sports and very common, normal, day-to-day, average, everyday things, I really like and I really enjoy. So, you know, that's that whole thing. Next topic. For anybody out there who knows me, and I can only imagine anybody who's listening to this at this point probably knows me very personally, because how else would you have heard of this? Love beer. Love drinking it. Love hearing about it. Love the process and the culture around beer and beer making and brewing and craft brewing and all that sort of thing. I absolutely love and enjoy it. There was a blogger, I think she goes by the name The Beer Bird, who had this interesting article where she mentioned Stone Brewing, based in Escondido, California, for a lot of people, at least here in Southern California, was kind of a gateway sort of brewery. That most people's, you know, sort of beer tastes, you know, were very much what they've always traditionally been, just, you know, the sort of lagers or brown ales that are commonly found in the supermarket or the local liquor store. And that it was Stone Brewing that was so, not only just in there in the flavor and the assertiveness of the beer, but also in just the labeling and the packaging, so completely different from what was normally out there, that it just sort of opened up this wider world to you know, smaller craft breweries in general. And for me, that was very much the case, very, very, very much so. One of my first experiences in craft brewing was Stone. It was one of their anniversary beers. It was the Stone, I believe it was the dark chocolate, it was a bitter dark chocolate oatmeal stout. Just this syrupy, thick monster of a beer. And I remember the first thing I said after I had a sip of it was, I just feel like I've eaten a chocolate cake. Very, very rich. And again, very, very much not in keeping with what I had, you know, sort of assumed a beer to be at that point. Around that time, you know, my wife, as a surprise for my birthday, I believe it was, took me to the Stone Brewing facility over in Escondido. Beautiful place, beautiful big building, this nice little lovely park outside, and a wonderful restaurant. Really great place. If I do say so, even kind of a nice, you know, someplace you could take the family. The sort of park area outside is very nice. People there are very sort of nice, engaging. The tour was funny and informative, and the brother and sister who at the time were doing it were also really interesting, and they just really got you excited about the whole thing. Not just Stone beer by itself, but just, you know, sort of beer and beer culture in general, which, you know, getting back to my previous topic, like sports, I enjoy mostly because of its universality. You know, there is something about beer. The fact that every country seems to have their flagship beer, I think, is a testament to how, to just sort of what a universal thing it is. You know, even in this country, it was, you know, it was the proliferation of it pre, you know, sort of Prohibition was largely, initially, at least an agricultural product. You know, we had wheat, we had grain. If I couldn't get a good price for it, I can sort of brew it, or in the case of whiskey, maybe distill it into a sort of a high margin product, and, you know, sort of away it goes. And, you know, every country, it seems, at least almost every country that I've sort of been to or heard of, has their sort of, like, this is our sort of national beer. Even if we're not a particularly well-known for beer, we're not a beer-producing country, we do have a beer. I think it was Frank Zappa that said something to the effect of, you know, in order to have a country, you've got to have, and I'm paraphrasing, so any Frank Zappa fans, I'm sure, will be able to correct me on this, but it's something to the effect of, in order to have a country, you've got to have, like, a, you know, a football team, a flag, a bomb, and a beer. And maybe not even a flag. I found that to be very true. And I think there is something about the universality of it that that speaks to. But anyhow, so since, you know, that first time we went to Stone Brewing, we had been there several times. And Stone, like many breweries I've visited since then, always had that really fun, casual, communal sense about it that I just love about breweries. You walk in, people are friendly with each other. They say hi. The people behind the counter are always happy to, you know, tell you about what they have and what's going on and what's interesting about it. And people around you are have their little brewery stories. And it's just this, you know, you just feel like everyone's a friend in the room when you walk into a typical brewery. And I understand that's something of a universal kind of thing. We went to a brewery called Cantillon over in Belgium, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, it's a whole other country. It's obviously a whole different culture. But I remember feeling that exact same way walking there. Even, you know, many of the people that didn't even speak the language I spoke. But it was, I just felt so very much at home right away. Everybody there was kind. There was that casual sort of politeness with everybody. Everybody there was eager to talk to you or be your friend or, you know, hey, where are you from? What are you trying? What do you like? Oh, I like this. And it was so wonderful. And that's what I've always, always loved about breweries. Not particularly strict or just sort of uppity or snobbish or snobby about, you know, what they're doing there. It's always just been just sort of very casual. Anybody can walk in. Anybody can have a beer. Wherever you happen to be at, whether this is one of your first forays into this, or you're kind of a veteran and you've seen one in a million, you know, different beers and different breweries, hey, that's okay, man. We're all just here to have fun and just enjoy ourselves. And I've always, always loved that about breweries. So, and, you know, getting back to the original point of the story. So not that long ago, again, after, you know, having gone to this brewery and other breweries many times, me and a couple buddies went to the Stone Brewing Company again. We were going to a wedding that was in the area, so we were like, hey, let's stop by Stone and, you know, have a pint and hang out and just sort of enjoy ourselves for a bit before we have to go to this wedding. So we go there, and, you know, it was just, there were just a few little things which kind of started striking me. You know, one, they started charging for the tours, which, okay, you know, fine. Before they used to be free, but now they have to charge. So, okay, not a big deal. These things happen. You know, costs go up. Sure, fine. Definitely a lot more crowded than normal, which, you know, again, it's just one of these things. Hey, it's becoming more popular. More people are discovering it. More people are enjoying it. I should celebrate and applaud their success. So, you know, okay, cool. That's another one of those things. It was that. And then I remember we, in the picnic area, you know, traditionally we've always sort of brought our own food. We, you know, bring a little, a few sandwiches or some outside food, pop on one of the tables, grab some Stone beers, and then just sort of enjoy ourselves. And so we were there waiting in line to get our beer, and we had some burgers or something from In-N-Out. And the guy's like, hey, whoa, dude, what are you doing? I'm sorry, what? No, there's no outside food here. I'm sorry, since when? Well, since as long as I've been here. You know, that's, I said, well, I apologize. We've just, you know, I didn't mean to, you know, overstep anything. We've been here several times and we've always sort of brought our own food. Yeah. Well, as long as I've been here, that's not been the case. I'm sorry. How long have you been here? Well, like a year. So, you know, can you guys, you know, help us out? We've sort of come all this way. We already have the food here. Yeah, no, I'll talk to the manager, but I'm pretty sure that's just not going to happen. Guy walks over, you know, talks to some other whoever. And comes back and Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You guys are just going to have to go. Okay, can we eat in the parking lot? Yeah, but, you know, you can't drink anything there. Okay. And I know when I just say it out loud like that, it sounds kind of petty. So I guess I'm going to try to really just communicate just the overall mood or the vibe or the feeling that I got. But there were just, that was for us sort of the last thing in our whole experience that day that just really made me feel like, you know what, this is not a microbrewery anymore. This is not that place anymore that I used to go to. And, with that sort of informal casualness that people had about things, you know, and it wasn't as though, you know, there were any sort of legal reasons why they couldn't accommodate sort of outside food. I know in some places it's like, oh, hey, our license is such that, you know, we can't, you know, you can't sort of bring in some food here because this and that and the other. And okay, fine. You know, I'm certainly not going to want to get you guys in trouble over that sort of thing. But it was more like, no, we have food here, so you can't bring in your own food. And there was just this overall sense of, you know, no, we're, you know, you're not our friends anymore. You know, you're just a customer now. You can come here and you can buy the beer and you know, the beer there is still wonderful. Their Woot Stout is fantastic. But between that and just a couple of other small experiences here and there, I just walked away just no longer feeling like this is a microbrew like I know microbrews. It is now firmly an established business and all that entails. And again, I certainly don't want to, like get on anybody's case for sort of doing well. But again, I just walked away from the whole experience feeling really bummed out that this was just no longer had that feeling and that vibe, that I'd come to love about places. And especially since this was kind of my first foray, this place was my first sort of foray into sort of beers and into sort of microbrewing. So it was just kind of a bummer, in general, just sort of going there. Yeah, again, I don't ever want to take, what should I say? It is hard because while you do want people to do well and you do want to support people and you do want to applaud their success and stand behind them, it always seems as though, when people get to a certain level, there is a certain, sort of cold, apathetic, sort of impersonal character that slowly seeps into the culture. And there's a part that I understand. You know, I've personally worked for several sort of small businesses where, you know, they've been in this sort of growth transition, and the people there had, you know, several people there had been there from the very beginning. We used to be such a family and everything was so nice and cozy. But ever since, you know, this sort of guy came in or this particular bit of success happened, you know, it's just felt like just a job. It just felt like a business. And I guess it happens just because people have to become a bit more organized, a bit more structured, as things get bigger to kind of manage things and to kind of manage that growth. And unfortunately, maybe with that becomes that sort of coldness and apathetic sense of like, you know, no, we can't be flexible here, because if we were flexible with you, we have to be flexible with everybody else. And while I understand it from a business standpoint, it's just kind of a bummer. It's just, you know, kind of sucks. But enough talking about beer for one night. Anyhow, I just kind of wanted to close with, you know, I don't know how good this thing is or how good this thing is going to be. And I think part of that was kind of why I was sort of hesitant to start for kind of a long time. I am very much a product of my generation in the sense that I have that weakness about me that I have a hard time wanting to start to do anything that I can't be really good at right away. That unless I can sort of excel at it right away and feel very confident about it right away, I just don't want to try it. And it's something I see in a lot of people. It's something I see in myself. And so I feel like that kept me from wanting to actually get on board with this for quite some time. I was listening to a podcast from Mr. Bill Burr, very funny man. and he's serving. He was talking to this other guy about getting into stand-up comedy, and he said some stuff that I guess sort of really stuck with me, and kind of encouraged me to actually kind of get on the board with mine. And he told him, he says, you know, just go on and just get up there. Don't expect to just bounce up there and to kill it for like an hour. You know, that's just not going to happen. Just go up there and just try to hang in there for 15 minutes. You know, just, again, like, not even do well for 15, just hang in there. Just go up there and just get through it for 15 minutes, because that's really what it's going to be like. And over time, you'll develop your confidence. You'll develop your style. You'll develop your sort of thing. And you'll, you know, as you stick with it, you'll do well with it. And that's kind of where I kind of said, you know what? I can't imagine that I'm going to come here and have all this great stuff to say and all these really cool and interesting things to sort of observe about. But if I just go in there and just try to hang in there, pick up a couple topics and just get through it, that'll be enough for now. And hopefully as time goes on, if I sort of stick with it and stay consistent, I can get better at it. So hopefully this was at least mildly interesting and mildly entertaining. That's really the best I can hope for at this point. And I really thank you very much for tuning in. Have a good one.